This is Kat. I've been catching up on the podcast, and I just wanted to offer that if you want another rider to chat with, I'd definitely be down. My bike identity is as a cis woman commuter, sometimes bike camping, though I only did that once last summer, but it was fun. But I ride year round, and I've done winter riding workshops with Bike Pittsburgh, especially for their women and non-binary group over the last 2 years. And I really love to encourage others to ride, especially year round. So if you want to have that perspective, let me know. I'll send you a message on Instagram, so you know who I am, and you can message me back if you'd like to have a chat. Thanks. I love what you're doing. Keep it up.
So that was Kat, and for episode 13 of Rolling Steel Cycling Podcast, Kat is going to be joining us as our co-host. And you might be asking yourself why I said co-host and not guest. And I guess that's because after having this discussion with Kat and going through the editing process of the episode, some things that she said really kind of like touched upon me and made an impression. And one of those things in particular was the need for cyclists and people who are frequent riders, to do our part and be very deliberate about trying to make cycling something that's inclusive and is something that is friendly to everybody, no matter what your walk of life and your life experience and how you identify. And her comments that you're going to hear in this show and some of what she shares about herself and how she sees herself and her bike identity, as she describes it, made me think differently, a little bit differently, about this show and about this podcast. And one of the ways it made me think differently about it is that while this is, I guess, my podcast, I want it to be something that you all feel a little bit of ownership over and you want to contribute to. And that it's not just my experience, but it's all of our experiences coming together. And after listening to this, I hope that that comment or that perspective makes sense to you. So from here on out, rather than calling the people who come onto this show guests, I'm going to be referring to folks as co-hosts so that you feel this is also something you can contribute to and you can kind of have ownership over yourself. So anyways, so yeah, Kat had reached out to me after an Instagram post I made a few weeks ago about my interest in finding folks to come on the show and talk about how cycling has kind of helped them deal with depression. And I got the idea about doing this after reading a story in Bicycling Magazine about six pro cyclists who find their way to be, find their bike to be their best prescription to whatever they're dealing with. I personally was really moved by their stories. I too have found cycling to be kind of the one thing that I can always count on when I need to make sense of the world around me, need to make sense of my life. But something about their stories, I couldn't really quite connect with them all told. Somehow, I guess maybe it was their being professional made me kind of feel a bit detached from their stories. So I really wanted to find some everyday riders who wanted to share their stories. And Kat was really the first person who responded to me after that post. And kind of, I guess, while we didn't really speak directly to depression, I really do think a lot of what she shared really drives home the point that when you ride often enough, cycling really becomes so much more than a hobby. It really becomes part of who you are. And I really identified with so much of what she said, and I wanted to edit out some of this content. I do that with every episode, but I really had a hard time doing that, especially with Kat, because just everything she kind of said was just so simple and honest, and I really appreciated her coming on the show. So thanks, Kat, for coming on the Rolling Still Cycling podcast, and also thanks to you for coming back for episode 13.
Thanks for reaching out to me about coming on to Rolling Steel and kind of sharing your personal story. There were a couple things that you said that really kind of sparked my interest and thought, you know, hey, this is somebody that would be good to bring on and talk about what you called as your bike identity. And it sounded to me something more than just like a person who rides their bike or commutes to work, but it seems like it's something that's really personal for you. And that was of interest to me. So I thought that maybe you could talk about and start us off with what you see as a bike identity and what you describe that as.
Sure, yeah. So I am a commuter, and I'm, now that I have a shorter commute, I'm often like in dresses on my commute. So I have a pretty feminine kind of look when I'm commuting, but I also, you know, it's very different from like a road cyclist or a racer kind of thing. But I don't feel like I see as many like me. So I just kind of want to be like, hey, we're here and you can come join us too. You know, us being people who bike commute as a form of transportation for fun. You know, do kind of goofy things on your bicycles when the weather's nice, that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it sounds like, I don't know, for one thing for me, whenever, I mean, I guess I've kind of been bike commuting for a while, but one thing that I've really been trying to get across in this podcast is that, you know, riding doesn't have to be for the pro athletes alone or for people who are really hardcore into it. You know, it's a lot more accessible than we think, and it can be a lot more accessible than a lot of people make it. So that's one thing that I kind of got from your message, was that you're just kind of like the everyday person who is a bike commuter, and you've kind of found a way to fit it into your life. And it's become something very personal to you and to who you identify as. So I thought that was really interesting. So now your area code, are you not from Pittsburgh?
I'm from the North Hills originally, but I did go to school in New York City and then ended up back here in good old Allegheny County.
Okay, so that was the area code that you had. I thought so. I had a few others in my contact book that were of that area code. So I was like, oh, okay, she must be from New York. So did you start bike commuting or riding in New York City, or?
No, it terrified me when I was there. So I went to art school in New York City, like you do sometimes. And I had several friends who were cyclists. Like most of them were either like messengers or they did it, you know, that's just how they got places. Usually a mix of both of those. And this is before New York started installing all these beautiful lanes that they have now. You know, I had friends that rode fixed gear with no brakes and no helmets. And that was like my first impression as an adult of like what traveling on a bicycle was like. And I was like, oh, this is not for me. And knowing what I know now, I'm like, man, I really wish I had, because I would have done it my way, but it was just so intimidating, specifically as a woman. It was very intimidating to me. Most of the people I knew that rode bikes were men. And the women that I knew that rode, you know, I am usually considered a very intense person. They're also intense, but somehow it still pushed me away. Like, I wasn't like, hey, show me this thing that you do. It just felt out of reach somehow. So unfortunately, no, I did not start biking in New York. It came out of necessity after I moved back into actual, like, living in the city of Pittsburgh.
I've been a Pittsburgh commuter. Okay. Now, you used the word just now of intense. Some people think that you're intense as a cyclist, but yet you see other people as more intense. Tell me about what's the spectrum that you kind of, or the sliding scale of cyclists that you see yourself on? Because like I kind of identify in the same way a lot. Like I know that there's people out there though way, way, way more serious than me, like in terms of their abilities. But like, hey, you know, being a year-round bike commuter, I said in one episode, it's kind of badass. And is that kind of like where you see yourself as, you know, somebody who's a little bit badass because you bike commute all the time, or where do you fit?
Oh, hell yeah, I'm badass. I'm intense on and off the bike. Don't get me wrong there. But as far as like intensity, like it's definitely different levels. Cause like there's like the casual family riders on the trail. And then there's like the intense, like I eat, sleep, drink, you know, pro athlete kind of cyclist. I feel like I'm more in the middle of that. But my intensity does come off, like I come off as very intense on my bicycle because I'm literally defending my own right to live and exist in this space.
Okay.
So I can come off very aggressive on my bicycle as far as like personality towards people, because I call out motorists on their phones all the time. Like I'm very vocal on my bike. When someone else is doing something wrong, or if they're about to hit me or not paying attention to me, yelling at them that I'm coming. So I'm intense in that way, but like I'm not somebody who's like intense about the equipment that they have. Like,
yeah.
In that retrospect, I'm more so towards like the weekend fun riders. I have been focusing on trying to use a little more humor, or like do it in a way that doesn't sound aggressive. Like I will sing songs to people like, put down your phone, I'm in the lane. Like I just make up stuff now. Inspired by some cyclists that did something like that in New York when people were in the bike lane.
Are you talking about the Star Wars theme? Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Everybody's seen that video, but I freaking love it. Yes.
Inspired by that, I'm like, yeah, let's make this more fun. Yeah. But, like, you're going to hear me. And I feel like part of what works for me now, so my old commute was 14 miles round trip. Now it's, like, 5 round trip.
Okay.
So I have the leisure of wearing, you know, depending on the weather, but the leisure to like honestly wear what I'm going to be working in. Cause I'm a sweaty person. So I need to be able to like sweat and not have it ruin my outfit. Dresses are like one of my favorite things. I'm very feminine on my bicycle. And I think sometimes that works to my benefit. Cause I don't look like a quote serious cyclist to some people. So they give me a little bit more space, but other times people treat me, sorry, my neighbor is being loud.
Okay.
Sometimes people also treat me like I don't know what I'm doing on the road because I'm not in quote, like wear.
Yeah. Now
that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, I only have my experience to go on, so I don't know. Do you think maybe that perception or how people see you or perceive you or respect or not respect your space as a cyclist on the road, does your gender also come into play with that? Do you have any reason?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And the negative or to the positive, do you think? I mean, could you maybe talk a little bit about that?
It depends. So, like, yeah, especially in the summer, like, I'm riding around in shorts and shorter dresses, you know, especially ones that aren't long because I don't want them to get caught in my wheel. So I like to have a practical but fun outfit. And I'm also very visibly tattooed. I get stares. Anyone that has a female presenting body will tell you that no matter what time of year, or what scenario or what outfit they're wearing, they've had those looks. They know exactly the look I'm talking about. Even today, just waiting for the bus earlier, I got one of those and I was just like, come on. It's an invasion of my personal body autonomy. But yeah, so sometimes it is like very negative like that. Sometimes I get catcalled. If I'm moving, at least it's easier to just kind of brush it off. It's harder when that person pulls up next to you at a red light or is following you for several blocks. So there is like a safety element that I think women, non-binary people, and, you know, like not cis presenting men, male presenting, really have to deal with in a way that a lot of men don't think about while on the road. So sometimes I do have to consider, oh, what outfit do I want that's going to draw the least amount of attention? Like I do have to spend extra time on what I'm going to wear in order to make my commute productive as well as protective. Sometimes I carry my U-lock like within reach in case, just in case. And I know a lot of women and non-binary people do that. They'll carry something, mace or U-lock or something close at hand if they need it. Because we're extra vulnerable, I do think commuting is a unique way for cis men to understand what it's like to be an other-bodied person, because you are more vulnerable. You have to ride more defensively usually, just to protect yourself, just to, you know, make sure that you can get from A to B safely, because it's not a guarantee.
That's a really interesting perspective. And I really had never thought about that before. I mean, I guess if there's one way in which I think I would maybe kind of relate to the vulnerability that you're feeling, I mean, I'd bike commuted for a while, but I'd never felt the intense focus about my own safety until after I had a child. And I had an incident downtown where I was, I guess it was like on Liberty Avenue. I was beside a bus and it was two lanes going the same direction. And somebody thought that they should be allowed to get around me. And so they drove around me in the area to my left and kind of pinched me between the bus. And I didn't get like physically pinched, but it was absolutely terrifying and
confining. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I've never felt so in danger in my life as I did at that moment. And so just hearing you kind of point that out, like that sense of vulnerability is something. Yeah, that's the only time I'd ever really felt that vulnerable in my life. And for to hear a fellow rider saying that their gender, they have to experience that vulnerability kind of all the time, whether it's through harassment and just feeling kind of on the outs from the culture itself. That's an interesting perspective to hear. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and I mean, and I have a lot of privilege being white. So I'm riding my bike in a space and people won't really think twice about me being in that area, but I know other people, especially my friends of color, have had a lot of issues with people assuming they don't belong. So I really do think becoming a commuting cyclist has helped me broaden my own like awareness of other people's struggles. I'm regularly just like putting my body physically out there almost every day. It's definitely improved my ability to be empathetic towards others. And really just solidified the fact that like, oh, I am a white person and some people listen to me before they listen to my friends of color. So I'm going to tell them, you know, give us 4 feet, you mm-hmm. know, they can take the lane. If you don't like it, take another road where cyclists don't go. So just trying to use my voice and platform in order to help protect those that may not have a voice or have that platform. So it all just kind of intersects.
Yeah. Now you said that you've been involved in bike advocacy some, and bike advocacy is not something you kind of hop on your bike and a month later you're doing advocacy work. So there's an evolution there. And so I kind of think this ties into what you described as your bike identity. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been bike commuting, and like when did you kind of start to feel this bike identity evolving and like this comfort or this interest in doing advocacy work?
So I started commuting about 4 years ago when I was living in Bloomfield and working in the North Side. It was around the time when the January of that year, I had quit smoking tobacco, and then my grandfather, who I had become very close with, passed away. So I was dealing with a lot of conflicting emotions during that time, because I was also driving my grandfather's car, which I then got rid of and needed a way to get to my job. So I started taking the bus, but with my commute, with the, you know, just the timing of the buses and everything, if my first bus was late by a minute or two, I would have to wait 45 minutes for my second bus in order to get the rest of the way. So one of my close friends who was also working with me and also happened to live nearby me and has been commuting for over a decade in Pittsburgh, they were like, hey, grab that bike and come ride with me. And it took some building of my endurance and everything to be able to do that, especially with a 14-mile commute average round trip. You know, it definitely was a lot to build up to even feeling like I belonged in the community. But also just knowing enough people, I started just being like, I was just so thrilled with the positive in my life. It helped me deal with my grief in a positive way, as opposed to, you know, destructive behaviors that I normally would have defaulted to. You know, if I was really upset, I'd get on my bike, you know, throw on some angry music or some fun music or whatever, and just go crush some miles on the trails. And just really just kind of like push all of that out. I actually used to like imagine that negative energy getting pushed out from below my pedals and just rolling away behind me. And that actually helped me cope with it in a very productive manner. I'm 33 and in the best shape of my life. So I went into my 30s just a new bike commuter, and I'm in the best shape ever now. So just being visible, being around, getting involved in different things, and having some friends that also do fun rides, like they do Alley Castle all year round. The one that really drew me the most was the Frigid Bitch Ride. Which you had DI and Alex on talking about that previously. I participated, my first year participating was the year it was like 7 degrees. And I spent a lot of time like in the Facebook group, just like amping up people, just being like, yeah, let's do it. This is going to be awesome. And people were like, it's going to be so cold. I'm like, but it's going to be great. Like, it will be so badass. Like, and for me, it was really just like, I'm like, I want the credit. Like, it was totally ego driven for me to be like, yeah, I want to go do this cold bike race with a bunch of other badass bitches and, you know, like have the boys freeze their butts off for us. And it was epic. It was amazing. And now I've been helping arrange it. I helped this last year. And I had somebody come up to me afterwards and was like, I think they were one of like the top finishers. And she was like, you motivated me to show up today. I'm like, you know, I was in the low rungs because I didn't care. I was just doing it for fun. I'm not competitive. So for me, it was just like, oh, cool. I own like part, like in my head, I was like, I own part of that because I got you to show up. And it wasn't like, oh, I should have a higher place. It was just like a, yeah, because I influenced you, you got this cool thing for your life. So that really inspired me. So the last two winters, I've done a, like what to wear winter riding kind of workshop with Bike Pittsburgh, and specifically with the Women in Non-Binary program. It's not difficult to ride all year round. It just takes some preparation. It takes, you know, just like having friends that have done it. And so just, I'm just kind of offering myself as a resource for people who want to do it. Cause I was just like, I don't have any other choice.
Yeah.
It was basically how, in my head, that's how I made it work. You know, I've never really stuck with any workout regimen before. Like running did not last long for me.
Well, that's the thing, bike commuting, from my experience, and the thing that's really made it enduring for me as a lifestyle is kind of figuring things out. And once you figure bike commuting out and you're able to do it, if you're so privileged to be able to do it, it doesn't feel like working out. You know, I mean, it's,
no.
That's the whole thing is that you had said about, well, if you miss a bus, it's 45 minutes until the next one. And that's the whole thing. I mean, I, looking back on it, those points in my life where I was standing outside waiting for a bus and it was either in the cold or the rain, you know, now if I'm on my bike and enduring that, it doesn't even feel like, you know, it just feels like I'm going home and I'm doing something that I enjoy. And, you know, so I guess it can be daunting. So I'm guessing, like, what were the couple things that you kind of figured out that made it not so daunting that you've kind of shared with others in your advocacy work? That was a daunting question.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to gather my thoughts for a second because, like, anybody can do it. And one of, like, the best parts about cycling, especially as a form of transportation, is it has a very low barrier to entry. You know, it's cheaper to get a beater bike than it is a beater car. There is a certain amount of, you know, accessibility or privilege that comes into all of it. And some classism within the community itself. You know, like I was luckily, my bike was gifted to me, so I didn't really have to do much of anything, but I quickly realized I needed to modify the bike so that I was comfortable riding. And really just like, I mean, using your time off to practice routes has definitely helped. And like having someone to really enjoy the time with you and make it more fun. Like I love going on bike dates with people.
Okay.
Where it's really just like pack a lunch and go ride around a bit and then find a spot and hang out and then ride home together.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Like those are really fun. Really fun. You know, just making it more reachable like that is definitely one thing. The great thing about the internet is there are so many things that people have shared. So if you have a question like, oh, how do I do this without buying more stuff? There's so many like life hacks on how to, you know, how to layer, how to dress properly for winter weather. You know, for the rain, I have a big poncho that I put on sometimes and just expect my legs will get a little bit damp. And, you know, like having a quick cleanup stuff. Like, unfortunately, I don't work at a job that has showers. Like, that would be ideal. But instead I have like deodorant and baby wipes and like, you know, just anything else I might possibly need to freshen up, just like in a drawer at work. I leave shoes at work. I have a sweater there so that I don't have to lug all that stuff around with me all the time. Like I have my work bike supplies basically. And just figuring out how that works for you. Maybe you do bring a whole nother outfit. When I was commuting, you know, it was about 6.5 to 7.5, depending on the route I took, miles to work before, I would bring a completely different change of clothes in my bag, and I'd get to work and then go in the bathroom and do a baby wipe down just to kind of freshen up and fully change my outfit. Especially in the summer because I am a sweaty human. But even in the winter, you know, you generate a lot of heat when you're riding. So it's learning how to do all those layers. And I still get it wrong. Especially when the weather changes, I like forget
it's an easy thing to get wrong. Yeah.
How to dress properly. So sometimes, you know, when it's more like transitional weather, I'll bring, you know, especially when it's like this time of year, I'll keep my, like, I have a fall spring jacket that I leave in my bag just so that I always have it in case it is a little chillier on my way home from wherever. And like keeping a sweater, like in the winter when I'm riding around, I'll have a sweater in my bag for when I get to a destination because I'll get chilled if I don't, once I take off like my biking jacket. I'll get chilled if I don't have another layer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like kind of learning what works for you because every body is different too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of my friends have like consistently cold toes. So they do things like different socks, like me, like merino wool is a heaven sent item. It's my favorite thing ever. And like neoprene toe covers, like, something as simple as just like a toe cover can make a difference.
Yeah, wind barrier can be.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about, I'm sorry for the transition here, but I wanted to ask you about bike maintenance because I kind of, for myself, bike maintenance and actually figuring out how to like do it myself was a big stepping stone for me. And from what you kind of described earlier, I can only imagine what it must be like. Like, I feel intimidated sometimes going into a bike shop myself because sometimes, I don't know, it's kind of like I've had the experience that if you have a semi-nice bike and you're a guy and you go into a bike shop, they expect you know, like, kind of everything. And so, like, they'll start talking to me at this level that I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. And, like, you know, and I'll just have to, like, tell them, like, dude, you're way above my head. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I just want to get this fixed. Like, and so, I don't know. I guess I was going to ask, do you do your own bike maintenance? Because I know some people, like, oh, they get a flat and they never ride their bike again because they don't know how to do it, you know? So as a bike commuter, I imagine you've either figured that out yourself or you've got a bike shop that you trust and has, like, I mean, can you talk about bike maintenance and what you do there? And how you figure that out?
It's a little bit of both for me. Part of it was also riding around with my friend who also knew how to fix stuff. So I learned how to change a tube or patch a flat on the fly, especially with the long commute. I've had to do that several times. So like the basic like low level stuff, I think I slowly absorbed and feel pretty confident in. Like, I can change my own tires. I use a knobbier set for the winter, so it's not a problem for me to transition my tires or change a tube if it's flat. I change my own brake pads, you know, just especially after wet weather. I'm not the best at it, but like just, you know, wiping down the bike to make sure things aren't rusting.
Yeah.
I can be really bad about that, but I've tried to like, I have kind of a space
it's amazing
in my living room.
How quick rust comes on us. You don't. Yeah.
And, you know, and after a rainy ride, especially, you just like, I just want to like get in the bathtub and not think about it. But I do my best, like as I get home from wet rides, to like, take a couple minutes to like catch my breath and then just spend 10 minutes wiping down my bike. I have a little setup in my living room that my partner, I was just like, I just have to have space for my bike. This is part of living with me.
Deal with it.
And he's totally like, he's fine with that. So I have a space in our living room where I have like, you know, my floor pump. I have a like basket of a bunch of my like bike necessities, like rags and stuff. And I have like two little mats that I set my bike on. So it's like just not directly on the floor, especially when it's wet. So it has like its designated spot. So that's helped with me making sure that I'm like taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do my best to take care of it. But I also, I really don't have a huge interest in doing some of the more nuanced work. And I also would rather make sure that my ride is safe. So
yeah,
I have a trusted shop. I'm shouting them out. Kindred Cycles.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and I found Kindred because, you know, I was definitely intimidated about going to a bike shop.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine, one of the co-owners, has, like, become a good friend of mine because I was like, hey, I'm coming in with my bike and you're a lady that works on bikes.
Yeah.
Hi. And so we've developed a friendship, and you know, usually the guys that work there, they will usually default to Catherine when I come in. They'll let her take my bike, which I kind of love. The last time I went in there, you know, it was post winter. I brought in some beer and was like, hey, can somebody give me a quick look just to make sure nothing's broken or like what I need to plan to replace soon. And so one of the guys was like, yeah. And like, you know, on a busy, nice Saturday, he just like took my bike and gave me a little once over because they're all familiar with me. I pop in every now and then.
Yeah.
Buttering them up with beer is also nice.
Is this like,
I was like, this is me tempting you guys to help me out. And it's just really being in the community together, supporting each other. Like I've seen all of them at various events. And you know, like I am always sending people to their shop. So it's just kind of that sort of like small business sort of personality I personally like, but like also having a woman in the shop is huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that helped ease my comfort level. So now when I go in there, it's like I walk in and, you know, they're all like, what's up, Kat? You know, and it makes it feel like home to me.
Yeah.
So
and,
that's
know, honestly,
very comforting and nice for me.
I certainly don't want to put any other bike shops in the city on blast or anything. because we do have a really great selection of shops in Pittsburgh. I feel like there's been, since I moved here in 2005, there's just been an explosion of, like, culture around cycling and also shops, and so that's been really great to see, and we have a lot of good shops to pick from. But a few months ago a friend of mine also recommended to me to go to Kindred, and he's a friend that we're going on the Gap trip here in June, and he was like, hey, you should go check out Kindred. And I was like, oh, I've never been there, I'll give it a try, I guess. And yeah, I mean, the first time I went in, Catherine, like you said, just was very approachable and down to earth. And like all of the guys that were there were very normal. And like I felt like if the one time they were, the one guy was definitely talking over my head a little bit, but I felt comfortable saying to him, like, hey, I kind of don't understand what you're saying, you know, can you kind of talk to my level? And he was like totally fine with adjusting it. Well, it didn't feel uncomfortable. So, yeah, I think it's really important to, like you said, to figure out the most basic things like changing changing flat and, you know, rust maintenance and cleaning and brake pads, you know, the most common things. But, you know, find a shop that's going to feel comfortable and like a safe environment, mm-hmm. because you don't want to, you know, that can turn people off. And
And
so
I mean,
cool.
like with shops, it's like the same thing as like, you know, any other shopping experience. Like if you feel uncomfortable with the mechanic, go somewhere else. Like there's plenty of places to choose from. There's so many different personalities, and like there's places like Cranex and Free Ride where like if you want to learn how to do all the stuff on your own, they mm-hmm. they both have resources to be able to do that. Free Ride in particular also has women and queer nights where it's just women and queer people working on their bicycles. And I kind of want to like build my own bike and mentioned it to Catherine, and she was like, I want to help you build your bike like, just for fun.
Yeah.
And it's really just, it's building up that relationship with whomever, whichever shop you go to. Because I've popped into a lot of different shops. It's just, I happen to be like, there's a lady here. Oh, I feel really comfortable. Oh, you're also like friends with my friends. So it was just an easy transition for me to go to that particular shop. Because we also just run in the same circles, especially now that I've integrated into the community more. You know, initially it was just like, I need like a face that looks like my face that that can help me like not talk down to me at a shop. And I think that's definitely something that more shops are trying to undo, but I know there's still a lot of the old guard that doesn't really want to evolve to that. I see it in like Facebook groups I'm in that are largely women or non-binary people who work in shops around the country and still face this kind of thing. Even in heavier cycling cities like Portland is one that immediately comes up, where there are some shops where there is that older mindset where it can be difficult for a woman mechanic to even just integrate, let alone have customers feel comfortable there. So I'm hopeful that people are starting to shift. Not everybody is going to shift, but it's definitely something that I think overall in our culture is starting to evolve.
Are there other types of riding that you do? Are you into group rides? I mean, I found group rides. I mean, you said about the Frigid Bitch, which is awesome, which it makes me wish I was a femme that I could participate in it because it's such an awesome race.
It's hard.
And I feel like if we men replicated it, it would just be all right. I even look at some of the, I mean, they're not exclusively men rides, but they make it so that women just don't participate in them around the city. And like, I feel on the outs even with those. So like, what's kind of the halfway point that, how can we kind of, you know, make it more accessible and more comfortable for people from all gender identities to ride together and be one community? Do you have any thoughts about
that? I have lots of thoughts about that. One easy way to make sure that a variety of people are showing up to your events is to have a variety of people creating those events. Definitely something in the like racing sport category is they'll do separate men and women's, and then non-binary people are like, well, where do I fit in? You know, there's a lot of drama over what constitutes male or female within, you know, sports lately. Specifically running, I think, is the one that's been in the headlines lately. But, like, even just trying to have, like, an open field race where only, like, cis men have organized it, and then suddenly coming to women and being like, oh, bring your friends. It's like an afterthought, and instead of having them there building it and supporting it, you know, it's easier to start from the beginning than to toss us in as an afterthought. And, you know, especially in the sports world, women's, you know, prizes are much smaller than men's in pretty much every field possible you can think of. So, you know, just treating us as the same, like equal, but, you know, including us and involving us from the beginning definitely helps. You know, Annalena, who created the Frigid Bitch, saw a need and was like, no, just these people. Like, you guys don't get to ride it. you get to support us for a change. No, I'm not trying to be like negative.
No, you're totally fine. I took my daughter to that, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I love taking my daughter, she's six, to anything that exposes her to, like, hey, her own power and her own, you know, her own potential. And I just wanted her to see it because my wife and I were like really working hard at getting her to try to ride a bike. And, you know, anything like that is just so enlightening and so empowering for a young kid, let alone a young girl. So yeah, I certainly understand where you're coming from with that. So.
And like another way you know, for especially cis men to support women and get women and non-binary people like involved in a broader, you know, like more activities that the men put on is show up for our events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, show up and support us, and we will be more likely to show up and support you because we'll see you as a partner and a friend as opposed to just another bro putting on an event. And like, you know, like the Wheel Mill does a girls only weekend. So it's like young women and non-binary people like learning from actual pros in the field how to ride mountain bike, like how to get into that sport. And some of them, you know, they just don't have the access normally usually because it is, again, another heavily male field.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, really, it's just like include us and show up and be like, hey, what can I do to support you? Hey, do you want to put on an event? I would love to help host one with you, like alongside, not taking the ownership. That sort of thing would really go a long way, I think. So, like, I also last summer was the first time I went bike camping. And that was
I wanted to ask about that because I feel like if there's one area that we can kind of strike a parity with people of all different, I guess, skill levels and different gender identities, it could possibly be bike camping. You know, I see a lot of people from all walks of life doing it. So how did you get into that and what have you done in terms of camping?
So again, because my close friend does it, I followed along. I do some stuff just so that I can hang out with my bestie, and I'm very grateful for the space that they give me for that. Because it's definitely a learning process for me. All of this is a learning process. But so I happen to have, like, I have, panniers that I have on my bike. I did get like a few things so that I can make it a little easier, like a net for holding my sleeping bag on top of my bike rack, which I have on year round anyways. But I ended up going the hammock method.
I was gonna ask, that's one question I've been wanting to ask. I've not done bike camping before, but I did a lot of reading and I decided to go the hammock routine too. So do you recommend that then?
I found it very comfortable.
Nice.
And especially knowing other people that do a lot of camping or do bike camping is helpful because I ended up borrowing a bug net from one of my buddies. And somebody else at the campsite we were at got bit up that did not have a bug net. So I was very grateful because I'm also very prone to bug bites.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, borrowing stuff wherever possible is definitely ideal.
Yeah.
But my friend that I went with has been doing it a while and has invested in camping equipment that condenses very tight and is very light to carry. And we also, you know, we're pretty basic about food stuff. Nothing that would really spoil. We made pizza on the campfire. So like, and you know, you're just going to be dirty and smelly and just kind of have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
It's just part of it. And it's totally fine. Like just embrace the dirt for a weekend. And there's something really kind of freeing about just being dirty. I wasn't on my phone. Like, we rode from, Bloomfield area to the Gap Trail and then rode out, I can't remember the name of the little town, but there was a, you know, I think it was like a 40-mile ride, maybe.
Maybe West Newton or McKeesport?
Yeah, West Newton, that's what it was.
Yeah.
We camped there, and it was awesome, and it was like perfect distance.
Because
we had a good time biking. We got there, you know, it was a really warm day, but we had we had pretty good weather, so that was nice. And then, you know, biked back. We were tired on the way back a little bit. But part of that was just like from, so like it got really hot during the day while we were getting back. So that kind of wore us out. So luckily we had a friend pick us up in the south side, so that we didn't have to bike uphill on the way home. So that's maybe something to consider is like where you end up, if there's a hill at the end of it, or if you like drive down and leave your car somewhere. That's also an option. But like I had a lot of fun and it was just like a nice chill ride. I like riding on the Gap. I hadn't gone that far before. And there's parts of it that are just so serene and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So like we would be chatting, you know, when we could, we'd ride next to each other and chat and, you know, about anything or nothing. And sometimes we would just be riding and enjoying the sounds of the earth and just appreciating all of it. So it was very meditative. So
yeah.
I highly recommend it.
That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm really looking
forward
to
it. And I really did
to,
like the hammock.
Yeah. Well, you're making me feel a little bit better because I've had people say like, oh, what are you thinking? You're going to have trouble finding trees or whatever. But like, I don't know. I've tent slept before and it's never a really great experience. So I thought a hammock would be a worthwhile effort. So
for me, it was a lot easier to do a hammock. Because I'm also not skilled at camping at all. So that's kind of an easier setup, less that can go wrong with it. I have back problems. So I had like a t-shirt wrapped up under my low back and that helped. But like you can get pretty comfortable in a hammock. You just got to wiggle around a bunch. Thank you for just letting me jump into this with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, and hopefully hopefully our paths cross soon on the trail.
I mean, we can intentionally make them.
Yeah, definitely.
Cross with a bike date because I always like bike dates.
Thanks again for stopping by for episode 13 of Rolling Still Cycling Podcast. Couple things before I wrap this one up. First off, I'm really excited about this weekend, Memorial Day weekend. I'm kind of going on an impromptu ride with a friend we're actually driving to, well, his wife's driving us so graciously. Thank you very much, Becky. And so we're going to Cumberland, Maryland, and we're going to ride back from Cumberland, Maryland to Pittsburgh over Saturday and Sunday. So this is going to be kind of a test run for our longer trip from DC to Pittsburgh the week of June 11th through the 15th. So I'm going to get to test out my bike and all my gear. I'm hoping everything goes well. I've been trying to get in as many miles as possible. I recently started riding on these awesome Tuesday night group rides, which is Team Decaf, They launch on Tuesdays at 6:15 at Tassadora Coffee Shop in Highland Park. And it's a really great ride. I mean, it's a bit more, it can at times be pretty intense, the pace and also the climbing. So if you are not comfortable with being in a group and at a high speed at times, and also a lot of elevation, it might not be the right ride for you. But I have found that while it is a little bit male heavy, there are some women who come out and ride it, and certainly, well, they kind of handle me too, but they really hold their own. And so it's been nice to see kind of a mixed ride at that level of experience. So yeah, I've been trying to get as many miles as I can in, really looking forward to this weekend. And maybe I'll be reporting back on that after we return next week. We'll see if I have it in me. But I already have a few people who have inquired, like Kat, about the topic of depression or just using cycling as your way to kind of cope with life and everything that it involves. So I'm going to be reaching back out to those folks and hopefully bringing them onto the show. If you would like to be considered to come on the show, or if you just want to give me feedback, there are a few easy ways to do that. First off, if you want to leave me a voicemail, you can download the Anchor app from iTunes or wherever else you download your apps from. Search for Rolling Steel. Once you download Anchor, and you'll see a voicemail button that you can tap on the app and leave me a voicemail, just like you're leaving a message over a phone call. You can also message me on Instagram at RollingSteelPGH. And that's pretty much it. But yeah, those are easy ways to get a hold of me. And also, as a reminder, just to help promote the show and raise attention and awareness about this podcast and the people that I'm bringing on to interview and the rides that they're organizing or how they're enjoying cycling in their own lives, you can go to iTunes and write a review, rate the show, and I guess that helps bump up the show's visibility in their ratings. So thanks again for coming by for Rolling Steel Cycling Podcast episode 13. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be talking to you later. Thanks.